Welcome to the podcast of Do You Know the Mob? I'm your co-host, Samuel Bren, 66th episode, I believe, with alongside the same person every time. We have not had to replace you or I once. Not once.
That's pretty good, folks. It's Brandon Ellis, and by 66, we are committed. We are excited. We're not on Route 66 right now, but we're in the studio.
Brandon, I wanted to do the marathon. I think it's at Tulsa, the Route 66 marathon. So if I ever do, I'll stay at your folks' house. Do a little of that. Folks.
I've ran that race before, actually.
Oh, I thought you said your brother had. I didn't know you had.
I was very young. I think I was like 10.
Please tell me it wasn't a full marathon for you.
No, it's a half.
See your dad going, gotta teach him young.
We gotta make him run from birth.
We don't go halfsies here in this family. You can run a half marathon, you'll be running the other half on the way back home.
You ain't getting a ride here.
You'll have to tell. Maybe Hannah could do that sometime. Your wife could give it a run.
She's talked about it. She missed all of her halves this year because she was injured or we were out of town for weddings.
There you go. Let's look it up. I'll come down too. We'll all do it. It'll be fun. What do you think your dad? Well, your dad used to be a triathlete and stuff, but like what do you think he could do now? I think he could do a mile.
He can do a mile. He's had triple knee replacements, so maybe a little bit much. But he goes and walks and runs every morning, like 3 or 4 miles.
Now, Brandon, what's your favorite Thanksgiving meal?
Ooh, sweet potato casserole with marshmallows on top.
Of course. We were doing s'mores the other night. My neighbor brought over the most ginormous s'more, marshmallow, off to show you. It looked like a freaking big as my face.
Did you use it as a pillow that night?
I might as well have. My dad used to use the old joke, if you, like, oh, one night I fell asleep and I dreamed of a marshmallow. Then I woke up and my pillow was gone. Oh, good old dad jokes. Oh man. All right, Brandon. Well, we'll do our opener. We'll do our trivia. 66 trivia's in. That's the other thing I'm proud of. We've kept consistent. If there's one thing we are, we're consistent.
Consistent. And I think I've been trending up on the trivia recently, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Well, we're really in for it now, Brandon. I can't wait to see you guess your way through this one.
Oh, I'm not happy about this.
Brandon, find your inner redneck. Find your inner redneck, all right? I need you to name the top 10 largest race car stadiums. Ooh. Oh, yeah. In the U.S., which I don't think you have. Yeah, which honestly, do you even have to say U.S.? Like, I don't know if other countries have like that. Like, you know, they do F1, but as far as like big race car stadiums, isn't that kind of a weird U.S. thing to do?
I think NASCAR is definitely U.S. thing. They have Formula One and rally car racing, but NASCAR is definitely U.S.
But it's hard part, having these big old stadiums, that's a American thing.
I'm going to take the help on this one, and I'm going to name a couple of stadiums, but then I'm going to start naming states because I don't know all the towns that have.
No, so you don't need it's not as hard as you think. Just name most of them have the name city, or all of them either have a city or a state in it. So it's not like, you know, football or basketball where it's Staples Center or something. It's not going to be like that.
Got it. All right, here we go. Talladega for the first one. Daytona for the second one. Mm-hmm. There's the huge one in Texas. I'm trying to remember what it's called. I'm just going to call it the Texas.
Okay.
Charlotte. Charlotte's huge.
Mm-hmm. That's the home city of NASCAR, the headquarters, Charlotte.
There we go. Fun fact. You know, I don't think this is right, but I'm going to throw this out as the fun one. Bristol Motor Speedway. It's it's a quarter mile lap, but I'm going to call it anyway.
Now, you've been to the Bristol one, right, Brandon?
I have. It is quite loud and very exciting. I do want to go back.
Have you gone in your romper yet?
No, I was actually there for work. So was not. I was actually, I think, wearing a polo. But anyway, all right. Next, the number
six. You really went too dressy there.
I came ready for work. There's one in Kentucky. Louisville, I'll call Kentucky.
Okay, that's six.
Number seven, Indianapolis, Sam, don't worry.
Indianapolis for you. Thought you'd forget.
No, Indianapolis 500. You tell me about it every year. Number eight. Is there anything on the West Coast?
Should I tell them? you just guessed. You did a good guess, man. You got this.
We're going to go with Los Angeles. Seems like it's going to have something out there for number eight. Number nine. I haven't said Mississippi yet, but I feel like Mississippi's got to have one. And number 10, we're going to give it to Nashville. Nashville's got a big course.
There you go. All right, Brandon. I think you're going to have fun hearing the answers to this. So this is a pretty random one. This is really random. Like, usually our trivia is random, but this is out there.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. I bet you didn't see this coming.
No. We did not rehearse.
Number 10, Atlanta Motor Speedway. Number 9, Michigan International Speedway. Number 8, this one surprised me, Dover International Speedway in Dover, Delaware.
Oh, my gosh.
Number 7, you're going to be kicking yourself on this one. Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Like, come on, man. Vegas. Now, good. You start cleaning up here, okay? Number 6, Talladega.
Okay.
Number 5, you're not going to believe this. You actually got it. It's called Texas Motor Speedway.
Okay, I knew it was Texas. I've been by that.
Yeah, you were like, what's the Texas one called? And then I'm like, it's Texas. Number 4 is indeed Bristol Motor Speedway. So You live close to one of the biggest, trashiest. No, I'm just kidding.
That is a classy establishment.
Oh, it's classy. Number 3, you got correctly, Charlotte Motor Speedway. Number 2, did you say Daytona?
I did.
Okay, good, because that's like the most famous one. Or one of the most famous. But number 1, Brandon, do you know what number 1 is?
Is it Nashville?
Indianapolis Motor Speedway. 400,000 seats in Indiana just waiting to be filled.
Wait, how many seats?
400,000. That's right. It's a big course. It's like almost 2 miles going around.
Why is it so big?
Because the Indy 500, man, the greatest spectacle in sports. That's what they say.
The last Coliseum.
The last Coliseum. but anyways, I thought those were pretty interesting, especially the Dover one. But you cleaned up on the top 6, so the last 4 are meant to be hard. I mean, you know, who would have guessed those? So.
Yeah, I thought you did pretty good. But here's the real question. Was our person, our mobster, a NASCAR driver?
No correlation. I probably should have done a better job in this podcast of linking our trivia to our mobsters. But you know what? We get everybody's mind off things, and then we reel them back in. So
I like it. Give it to me, Sam. What we got?
Well, I would give it to you, but I got one fun thing to tell you, Brandon. I was really proud of myself. Went to trivia night last night, and they asked what was Jason Bourne's real name, and I was so proud of myself because all those wasteful moments my dad showed me these movies, and I called my dad and I said, I knew it. So yep, David Webb. I couldn't remember it. Yeah, it's a small piece to, I mean, it's like at the very end of the third movie, like it's not, you know. Anyways, I was still proud of myself. Alrighty, here we go. So our mobster today is the one and the only Carlo Gambino. We just haven't quite done him yet. He was been mentioned, you know, there and then in the New York Mafia ones, but we hadn't actually did a dedicated episode to him. His nickname is, of course, and I know a few of them have these throughout the times, but Carlo Gambino was known as the Godfather.
The Godfather.
That's right, Brandon. Give me your best one. You got this.
The family. You must respect the family.
Say my name.
You come to me in your time of need.
So Carlo Gambino was born in, of course, Sicily, Italy, in 1902. He immigrated to the U.S. and landed in New York soon after Gambino was just 19 years old. He became a made man in the mafia. So I love when they put made man. Like, I'm like, well, something tells me in the mafia, they don't normally just hand you the keys.
You have to earn that. There was something that happened under the table.
Yeah. So he fell in with a group of young mafiosos known as the Young Turks. We've talked about the Young Turks, of course.
Uh-huh.
So they are led by figures like Frank Costello, Lucky Luciano, and so forth. And they had a different view of the American mafia than the older Sicilian-born members. I don't know if we've actually gotten into that, Brandon, but it was kind of like a transition of generational power, you could say. So, you know. like the country itself, they thought that the mafia needed to be more diverse, needed to be, like, forge diversity, non-Italian organized crime groups, whereas the older one was a little more, you know, stay in your lane, stay in your people. So this rubbed many of the old guard of the mafia the wrong way. These old ones were known as the mustache beats we've talked about. So by the 1930s, the tensions boiled out over into an outright war. And, you know, we've talked about this many times. I probably still mispronounce it, Brandon, but the Castamillerese War. So,
yes,
the Sicilian gang that led the fight against the Young Turks. So anyways, the Young Turks, officially led by Lucky Luciano, quickly realized that the violence was destroying the organization. So, you know, Luciano did what he did best. He brought them all together, ended the war. There was some assassination of leaders, of course.
Of course.
So to prevent another war, they decided that the mafia would be ruled by a council. This sounds like Star Wars, the Avengers. So the council would be made up of the leaders of different families and try to resolve disputes. So Gambino, as you probably know, Brandon, one of the big family names, of course. So, yes. So Gambino thrived in the reborn mafia and soon became a top earner for his family. He worked under the Mangione family, which the family names have changed over time, a few of them. And he wasn't shy about branching out into new criminal schemes. During World War II, he famously made a lot of money by selling ration stamps on the black market. Brandon, what exactly is this?
Yeah, the ration stamp is a stamp or a card issued by a government to allow the holder to obtain food or other commodities that are in short supply during wartime. And this was used, like you just said, Sam, in the United States during World War II. And the ration books contained removal stamps for certain rationed items that were there to be used in the war efforts. So sugar, meat, cooking oil, and canned goods were very common. And a person could not buy that item unless they gave the grocer the right stamp. And once the person was out for the month, because they got them by month, once they're out for that month, they can no longer buy that item. I actually remember my grandma telling me about this when she was a kid.
Seriously?
Yeah, no, she told me about it. And at the time, that was a foreign concept to me because I was significantly younger when she was telling me about it. But yeah. They didn't have the stamp. They didn't get the item.
Man, different times.
Different times indeed.
Mm-hmm. So Vincent Mangano and his brother Philip were slain on the same day in 1951. This was under Mangano's underboss, Albert Anastasia. So 6 years later, 1957, Gambino himself supposedly orchestrated Anastasia's murder, which we talked about was a huge, was a very climactic, suspenseful thing. And that when the earthquake died, Albert the Earthquake.
The earthquake.
Mm-hmm. One so, and of course, doing this, he assumed command of the crime family for the next 19 years. So there's a reason they take people out, because there's a reward to it after, I guess. there's something in return. So under his guidance, the Gambino syndicate expanded into territories and rackets it hadn't in the past. They took almost complete control of labor unions on the New York and New Jersey waterfront, which is very interesting. This involved JFK Airport, trucking, construction companies, garment industries. I mean, they controlled the East Coast. So pretty cool. I mean, horrible, but in a cool way. They profited handsomely from a lot of white collar scams and finance stuff. The unofficial chairman of the board of the Mafia's commission, the ruling council made up of the country's most important dons, Gambino was beloved by his men and many fellow godfathers in New York across the nation. He had strong ties with mobs all over the U.S. cities. Gambino discouraged narcotic trafficking among his troops. This, he actually instituted a deal and die policy, which we believe, Brandon, that's just like, hey, don't be selling drugs. So
don't be doing.
Yeah. And the reason they do this, because there's long sentences for drug offenses. So he was smart to be, you know, let's not give the authorities reason to look at us. Mm-hmm. So pretty interesting, because I feel like we hear a lot of mobsters that are definitely getting into that. So or at least especially these days. He preferred instead to stick to the traditional mob rackets, bookmarking, loan sharking, hijacking, extortion, maintaining as much presence as possible in the labor union, unions. He was hounded by the FBI for decades. In 1970, he was indicted for masterminding a major East Coast burglary ring. The government never nailed him, of course.
Wow.
He was known for offering arresting FBI agents coffee and dessert at his home before they took him in for questioning and booking, which is pretty hilarious.
That's pretty bold. Oh, I like it.
Sir, would you like some coffee? My wife just made some cookies in the oven.
There you go. We'll be back soon. We can just grab this to go.
So 2 years later, 1972, Gambino's 30-year-old nephew, Manny, was kidnapped and murdered by the Irish mob. This was led by Jimmy from Queens, Big Ratney. What a nickname, Jimmy from Queens.
Jimmy from Queens.
You know, my boy Jimmy down in Queens. The Irish gangsters had been kidnapping Italian mafioso and extorting six-figure cash ransoms for their release for more than a year, and they grabbed the younger Gambino. Demanding vengeance, Gambino called on the one and only John Gotti and his best friend, Angelo, a.k.a. Fat Angie Rogerio.
The names in this episode.
I know. The nicknames are the best. Another guy involved was nicknamed Ralphie Wiggs.
Oh, even better.
So they were gunned down in Staten Island in a tavern in 1973. They all eventually were convicted and imprisoned for the crime. Although Carlos was indicted for the hijacking, and although the U.S. Supreme Court also upheld the order for his deportation, severe hard tax deferred trial and deportation. How convenient. So Gambino battled health problems in his later years, finally succumbing to heart disease in 1976 at his Long Island home. Before dying, Gambino controversially bypassed his number two in charge in favor of his brother-in-law, Castellano. Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. He was a more corporate-style good fella. So this left the syndicate in shaky ground. So the death, Della Carrese's death from lung cancer in 1985, and Castellano's decision to skip his underboss woke up about a Gambino clan coup up. So Gotti staged the murder of Castellano and his right hand man. And anyway, so things got kind of interesting after Gambino died, and we'll have to get into that in other episodes. But basically, there was some issues at a Manhattan Street steakhouse and speakeasy where people were died or staged dying and so forth. So
there was an issue at a steakhouse.
Yeah, exactly. There was a let's just say the steak wasn't made quite right.
It's a little extra bloody.
So the title character in the most critically acclaimed movie or mob movie, The Godfather, was, of course, inspired in part of Carlo Gambino. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
Oh, yeah. So more than 40 years after Gambino's death, the New York crime family is still named after him. And the federal government's still trying to crack down on John Gotti era and the Gambino family. So now, Brandon, I had to ask, since we brought up steak, how do you like your steak?
Medium rare. What about you?
Oh, I'm a medium well. I've learned my wife doesn't want any blood. She's scared of the red.
So you now like it well done.
I guess, basically.
You know, basically. Sam, I was actually reading an article today on the Gambino family.
Oh, really? Like, ironically, you were?
Yeah, where some people got arrested.
Oh, recently?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they're very prevalent still. I'm trying to think of what the current mob, like, five families are in the mob. It's Gambino, Genovese. Is it called La Cheese?
And then I think so. I screw up their name.
And then Colombo and Joey Bonanno's group. So Bonanno. I think those are the five still in action today. And like I said, they've changed names over time and stuff. But You know what we should do to really prep for these episodes? We should watch what's the mobster television show? The Sopranos.
Sopranos. maybe one day we get the extra time.
Well, I'm looking forward to other episodes. Spy Guy did email us a few more goodies, a few more good ones. So,
goodies.
Spy Guy.
Well, hey, we appreciate everybody's recommendations, folks.
Always feel free to email us at doyouknowthemob@gmail.com. And thank you for listening. I'm your co-host, Sam Bren.
And this is Brandon Ellis.
Signing off.